What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Kachava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor, crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans with 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to kachava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's kachava.com, code FITNESS.
Hello and welcome to the Katie Halper Show. On today's episode, I speak to Tara Reid, a California-based victims' rights advocate and activist. Last spring, after Nevada politician Lucy Flores shared that Biden had touched her inappropriately, Tara was one of 7 women who came forward to accuse Joe Biden of similar misbehavior. At the time, she told the local reporter that when she worked as a staff assistant for Joe Biden's Senate office in the early 90s, he would put his hands on her shoulder, run his fingers up and down her neck. Almost immediately after sharing her own story, Tara was doxxed and smeared. There was more to Tara's story than she had revealed, but she felt too vulnerable to tell it. Then in January, she approached Time's Up, the nonprofit organization which helps women share their Me Too stories. As we now know from a March 24th Ryan Grimm article at The Intercept, Time's Up told Tara they couldn't help her because funding a Me Too allegation against Joe Biden could threaten their tax-exempt status. As Grimm also points out, the public relations firm that works on behalf of the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund is SKD Knickerbocker, whose managing director, Anita Dunn, is the top advisor to Biden's presidential campaign. Tara finally tells her story for the first time on this interview. I spoke to her this week, and I want to warn listeners that Tara describes an alleged sexual assault. There were no witnesses, but her close friend and her brother, both of whom I spoke to, remember Tara telling them about the incident at the time. You will hear a few beeps during the episode. That's where I beeped out the name of one of Tara's immediate superiors. So Tara Reid, thank you so much for talking to me. Where would you like to start? Where does the story start for you?
Well, the story starts when I went to work for Joe Biden. That was in 92. And so I was hired that fall, the year that Bill Clinton was inaugurated as our president. So I was in, before that, I was out west and I had worked on a congressional race. Before I was working in politics, I was an actress and a model, and I had studied classically, and I really loved the arts, and I come from a family of arts and activists and whatnot. And then I got interested in college in political science, and I went and interned for Leon Panetta when he was a congressman and worked on an animal rights issue that ended up being put into law and signed into law. So it was very exciting, and it was a very successful experience. And then when I applied for Joe Biden's office, I had a phone interview, and then they offered to interview me in person. And so I went out to DC and I interviewed in person. And when I was there, the scheduler interviewed me, and Joe Biden happened to walk breeze past, and he saw me, and she introduced me, and we were in the inner kind of alcove office. And he asked me my name. I told him, and he said, "Oh, that's a good Irish name." And she offered to him, "Hey, she worked as an intern for Leon Panetta." And he's like, "Oh, he's a good guy." And then he looked back and smiled at me and said, "Hire her." Mm. And then went away. And the scheduler looked at me and said, "I guess you're hired." Mm.
What was the position for?
It was for a staff assistant position. So I, you know, pretty low on the totem pole, but you're able to like work through it. So I was working with the intern. So I supervised the intern program and made sure, like, you know, all the mail was distributed where it was supposed to. The interns did that and trained them and worked, for legislative aides, I would like help go to a hearing and take notes or write something.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah. So it's sort of like you just did what you had to do. All hands on deck sort of attitude.
And you were how old at this point?
Mid-20s.
And how long did you work for Biden in total?
9 months.
You would later come forward after Lucy Flores came forward about something that happened in 93.
Yes, and I actually did come forward in 93, but not to the press, but I went through protocol and complained.
What was your complaint about?
Sexual harassment. I did not complain formally about the other piece of what happened that I'll talk about in a few minutes, but I talked about what was witnessed. The general atmosphere of the office, the way I was treated, because I would see him at meetings and he would basically put his hands on me, put his hands on my shoulder, run his finger on my neck. He was very like handsy with a lot of people, mm-hmm. but like with it, it's like what I had, and I have said this, that's in the press before from the last time. It made me feel like an inanimate object. I didn't feel like a person. He didn't like make conversation with me or talk with me or ask me anything relevant. It was just, you know, it was definitely that kind of vibe. So it was uncomfortable.
So it was really after that incident when I walked in and everyone was arguing, I was called into the office and I was very nervous because I thought I did something wrong. Like I remember feeling almost sick to my stomach, nervous. Like, you know, this was a big deal getting called in rather than them just coming and talking to me. When I walked in, people's voice were raised. They were arguing and that there was a legislative assistant. She was a senior aide. She worked on women's issues, I believe, among other issues. I know judiciary issues for sure. But anyway, she turned to me and she, he said, the senator thinks that you have, that you're pretty and that you have nice legs and he wants you to serve drinks at this event, fundraising event. And you don't have to do that, Tara. You don't, you know, that's not part of your job. And then the scheduler came in right after she kind of interrupted her in the middle of what she was saying and then said whatever she said. And I can't remember everything that was exchanged, but basically then everyone kind of looked at me. And I just froze because I didn't know what to say to anybody. And it was uncomfortable. And I knew that no matter what I decided to do, I was going to either, you know, make my immediate supervisor very unhappy, or I was going to look bad in the eyes of this person, the legislative, you know, assistant who was sticking up for me, obviously, and didn't think I should be objectified. So It was a strange position to be in, and I just left. I didn't say anything, actually, and I called my mom, and she was very adamant that I document it and file a report, and she said, you know, and her exact words were, and I remember because we got into like a little bit of an argument about it, but she said, you just march in there and you tell them this is sexual harassment and, you know, and you file a complaint, and I tried to explain to my mother that it wasn't easy. You couldn't just march into Ted Kaufman's office, who was the chief of staff, and that there was a protocol and that there was a way to do that. And my mother was very, she just said, you know, you tend to be a little passive sometimes, you know, sometimes you stand up for yourself, but sometimes, you know, you let people take advantage of you. You need to stand up and you need to address this. So I already kind of had those feelings, but that was that point, I knew I wanted to look at taking some action. So I did a non-formal thing by just going to my supervisor. That's when I was met with some of her attitude about the whole thing. Like, why wasn't I complimented? You know, that people would be flattered to be liked by Joe Biden. And, you know, what basically she was also admonishing me to keep my head down if I wanted to last. She said that a couple of times. And she took me in the hallway a couple of times and just was very, you know, kind of chewed me out a few times. And nothing was in writing. But the time frame for me from this event to when I met him with the gym bag and the incident is compressed for me. And I don't know like how much time passed, but I do know a couple of things happened between those two events. One of them that was significant was being told I had to dress differently and then I was too provocative. And that was by the assistant and by the scheduler. And they were finding fault with my work all the time, like every little thing. And it was almost to the point where three or four times a day, there would be something wrong. And my mother, I would call my mom just one day in tears, you know, and she was like, you know, this is retaliation. They know that you want to file something, you know, you're going through the motions. Cause I had gone as far as to talk to Dennis Toner, who was the next person up after. And Dennis Toner then was below Ted Kaufman. And you know, there was just like this protocol you followed. And I eventually did talk to Ted Kaufman, and Dennis Toner and separately. Then wasn't even talking to me anymore. It was Dennis Toner that dealt with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, up to this point, working for Biden had been kind of tense. How his public persona is very different than what mm-hmm. he's like to work for. It's more like working for a corporation. It's very top down and it's very tense. And he doesn't treat his staff that well. So in my opinion, that was my experience of it. And some other people that were complaining about it and would leave abruptly. In fact, the position that I had, they were having trouble keeping a person in it. So I don't know what that's about, but that's one of the things that the interview they made clear is that people kept leaving and then they wanted me to stay and asking if I had plans to stay. And I said, yes, that I wanted to make a career on the Hill and that I'd eventually like to run for office someday. I mean, that was my, and when I came in, it was at this beautiful time, you know, this is before all the scandals, before the impeachment of Clinton. This is when he first was president. I got to go to the inauguration. I got to go to the inaugural balls because I was working for Senator Biden. And it was this magical time in a sense. I walked the Bridge of Hope, got to meet Maya Angelou, which is one of the highlights of my life. And it was just amazing and wonderful. So I was like a puppy and with enthusiasm, you know,
right.
This was a dream job. I was so happy to be there. So I just went in with the attitude of doing everything I could to be, you know, a good employee to be there. And I was very excited and honored to be there.
And so did you serve drinks at that event?
I did not.
Okay. So, okay.
It kind of just went away.
Right.
I said no. And then when I said no, I sort of got attitude about it. And then I pushed back on another thing that had nothing to do with, you know, sexual harassment. I pushed back about the intern program because I was given a stack by Ted Kaufman, the chief of staff of resumes. And he told me, he directed me firmly to hire DuPont employees, children only.
Wow.
And I pushed back and I said, we need more diversity and I want to hire some women and I want to hire from other places. Like you hired me. And then after this whole conversation, I was like, how did I get hired? I'm not from Delaware. I'm
right.
from West Coast. Like, right. So he said 50%. So he relented 50% and it was still just strange. So I'd have these interns that were more diverse and working class. And then I had these really privileged interns. So it was that kind of stuff was happening. So there was like regular work challenges happening, right?
So how much interacting did you have with Biden?
It's because I was there. I would see him on and off quite a bit, but wouldn't necessarily talk with him. He was always breezing out, breezing in with his people that would stay around him, usually the upper level staff. And they usually kind of kept right with him. So, but once in a while I would see him and he would just do that thing that guys do, you know, when they look you up and down and then smile and stuff. It just was obnoxious. I mean, and back then I just accepted it for what it was. When I talked about this discomfort that I had, I was really timid about it. I found myself getting more and more like withdrawn and timid about speaking out because of the atmosphere and because so closed down about hearing about it. She would just be like, you know, one of the things she said to me was, you know, the senator likes you, you know, most women would really like that attention. She goes, you know, I don't understand your attitude. Like, what is the problem? So it was, you know, I definitely felt, started feeling like I just didn't really belong there. It definitely wasn't a progressive office.
Yeah.
it was definitely not like that then. I don't know what it would be like now, but the incident when I talked about the discomfort, like I said, I was told to just do what I was told. And then it wasn't too long after that that called me in and said, I want you to take this to Joe. He wants it. He wants you to bring it. Hurry. And I said, okay. And it was a gym bag. She said, you know, take the gym bag. She called it athletic bag. And, you know, she said he was down towards the Capitol and he'll meet you. And so I went down and I was heading down towards there. And he was at first talking to someone. I could see him at a different distance, and then they went away. And then we were in like the side. It was like the side area. And he just said, hey, come here, Tara. And then I handed him the thing and he greeted me. He remembered my name. And then we were alone, and it was the strangest thing. There was no like exchange, really. He just had me up against the wall, and I was wearing like a skirt and, you know, business skirt, but I wasn't wearing stockings. It was kind of a hot day that day, and I was wearing heels. And I remember my legs had been hurting from the marble, you know, of the Capitol, like walking. And I remember that kind of stuff. I remember like that, and it was kind of an unusually warm day. And I remember I was wearing a blouse, and he just had me up against the wall, and the wall was cold. And I remember it happened all at once. The gym bag, I don't know where it went. I handed it to him, it was gone. And then his hands were on me and underneath my clothes. And, and then he went down my skirt, but then up inside it. And he, penetrated me with his fingers, whatever. And he was kissing me at the same time, and he was saying something to me. He said several things, and I can't remember everything he said. I remember a couple of things. I remember him saying first, before, like as he was doing it, do you want to go somewhere else? And then him saying to me when I pulled away, he got finished doing what he was doing, and I kind of was pulled back, and he said, come on, man, I heard you liked me. And it's that phrase stayed with me because I kept thinking what I might've said. And I can't remember exactly if he said I thought or if I heard, but it's like he implied like that I had done this, like, I don't know. And for me, it was like everything shattered in that moment, because I knew like we were alone. It was over, right? He wasn't trying to do anything more, but I looked up to him. He was like my father's age. He was this champion of women's rights in my eyes. And I couldn't believe it was happening. It seemed surreal. And I just felt sick because when he pulled back, he looked annoyed and he looked angry. And he said something else to me that I don't want to say. And then he said, I must have looked shocked. And he grabbed me by the shoulders. I don't know how I looked, but I must have looked something, because he grabbed me by the shoulders and he said, you're okay. You're fine. You're okay. You're fine. And then he walked away and he went on with his day. And what I remember next is being in the Russell Building, like where the big windows are, and the stairs, by myself, and my body, I was shaking everywhere because it was cold all of a sudden. And I don't know, I felt like I was shaking just everywhere. And I was trying to grasp what had just happened and what I should do or what I should say. But I knew it was bad because he was so angry. Like when he left, like I could feel, you know how when you know someone's angry, they don't necessarily have to say anything. Like he smiles when he's angry and you can just feel it emanating from him. Like, right. So then I went home and I called my mom because I didn't know who else to call. And she was wanting me to go make a police report. Like right then, my mom was very adamant that I do that, and very strong about me doing that. And I said, no. And we had like an argument about it. And I said, Mom, you can't do that. And she had known about the other stuff and had encouraged me to document it, which I did, and go to the protocol about the sexual harassment. And then after this incident, I did follow her instructions and do that part. But I didn't talk about what happened, and I was too, I tried to bring it up to later, and she just wouldn't hear it. She like shut me down before I could even get there, and said, "I can't believe you're trying to bring things like this up." And she said, "How can I bring this to Ted Kaufman? He'll just think we're all on our periods."
Wow. And she could tell you were talking about something more than the harassment, or she was just saying that about the harassment?
I don't know. I can't project onto like what that conversation was, because I was starting to tell her. She didn't know. I didn't tell her. I started to try to go right there, and she like, shut it down.
Right. Got it. Yeah.
Like, I don't want to hear this. Like, that's enough. Like, you know, kind of basically letting me know, like, if I didn't like it, I could just go. And so it wasn't too long after, when I would see Biden after that, he would just not look at me. He looked angry. Like, he would get this look on his face and like, look, you know how someone walks by you instead of greeting you and smiling like they normally do, they won't look at you.
Yeah.
He was pissed. Right. So then the final interaction I had was, it was a mandatory meeting, where I had to be there, and he came up behind me and put his hand on my shoulder, and then put his thumb or finger, I don't even know what, but up and down my neck in the back. I have thick hair, and it's in the back of my hair. And I remember I just froze because I didn't know what that meant. And it just was uncomfortable. And I again told my mom about it because it was just weird. And mom said, you know, that's just power. He's trying to dominate you.
So this was after, because this was after the assault had happened. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the last kind of time I ever really interacted, because they put me in a windowless office. I didn't have the one with the window anymore. I was cut off from staff. I was not supervising the interns anymore. Literally, my job was to show up and just look for another job. I wasn't allowed to go to legislative hearings, nothing. So, but the chronology was that I was then looking for a job. And in June, I was volunteering for the RFK Memorial, the 25th anniversary. I did the VIP tent, and I was talking to a person in Kennedy's office who was trying to help me backdoor, trying to like get them to stop what they were doing. And anyway, technically, I think my Senate record goes till August, but I remember leaving before then. And I didn't have a job. I couldn't get a job. Once like word got around unofficially about my trying to file a complaint, filling out a form and stuff, it's like, no one on the Hill. Usually I would get, like, when I would send out resumes, I would get responses right away.
I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. You consider reporting the harassment?
I did try to complain about the harassment internally, but I was going through protocol. You go to your supervisor first, then to Dennis Towner, then to Ted Kaufman. Like, I was following the protocol, how you did it, right?
Yeah.
They didn't do anything, right? And then it got worse, and then that happened. So then I went outside and tried, and there was like this office set up, and I can't remember if it was in the Rayburn office building, or if it was in the, it seemed to me like it was in a congressional office building, not the Russell Senate, Longworth or Rayburn. And it was this little tiny office, and you go up and there was literally a clipboard, and I filled out a form, and someone kind of was just at the window, but it was weird and it wasn't very confidential and it was just odd. So I filled out the form, and I know it existed. They took it, and then I don't know what happened to it. So I've tried to track that form down, and I was told it was probably returned to Biden's office. So it's an archival material.
Okay, so you, there's sexual harassment that you witness and experience, or you go through protocol, then nothing happens, then you have the incident in the alcove with Biden, you tell your mom, she encourages you to file a police report, you say no, but I will do something external about the harassment, not the assault.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
And I thought about trying to talk about it. I did. I tried. I just couldn't. I couldn't. Even now, like, it's so hard. I've worked as an advocate for domestic violence cases and help kids, and I help, you know, whatever, but it's just, there was no framework back then. And
right.
To be really clear, my mom educated me after it happened that it was sexual assault. I felt like it was my fault, that I didn't bring it on. And the reason after the whole drinks, serving the drinks thing happened, things got really tense for me. And it's like, my supervisor kept finding fault with my work. Like all of a sudden I was doing things wrong all of a sudden. Mm. And then she took me aside and sent in an assistant and said, we want you to wear different clothes. You need to button up more. You need to wear longer skirts. Like, in other words, she said, don't look so sexy. She was like really blatant about it. And she goes, try not to be so noticed. You're too noticeable. The other person was more awkward about it. She was just like, it's not coming from me, but they're telling you to wear longer skirts and button up more. And you're a little too provocative,
right,
is the word she used. Right. Whatever. So, and I was like, oh, this is weird. So I told my mom that, and she goes, that's retaliation. They're trying to retaliate. You need to document everything. And my mom was very adamant. Mom, and my mom even said, you march in there and you tell them this is sexual harassment and you don't take it. I'm like, you don't march into Ted Kaufman's office and you don't do that. And I just wasn't comfortable. I said, I'll never be able to get a job on the Hill again. And it didn't matter because I couldn't anyway. So those
are my memories of the overarching retaliation piece. But again, it started as a verbal complaint and then escalated to written. They did threaten to write me up about what I was wearing. And I was just wearing suits, your average, skirt, blouse, sometimes a blazer, whatever. But I don't know. They were nice, I guess. I didn't have that many outfits. I had just a basic wardrobe that I would interchange, but it's now I look at it, it's laughable. They were just turning it around on me.
Right.
Cause I was wearing navy blue and black and pinstripe, back then pinstripes were okay. I don't know why, but,
nothing wrong with pinstripes.
So yeah. To be really clear, I started out with just on my end, documented. My mom was forcing me to and I was even keeping a journal at the time.
Which you don't have anymore, right?
No, I don't. I wish I did. I just never thought this would ever come up again. And there's many things from my youth that I don't have and I wish I did, but
yeah.
But she was kind of telling me what I needed to do. She predicted that they would retaliate and she was absolutely right. I didn't think they would. For some reason, I was just in this I just thought it would go away, after the drinks thing. I thought, well, when he gets the message, I'm not interested, or I'm not one of those people that just wants to try to make contacts that way, it'll just go away.
Right.
But it didn't. It got worse. And they really took an attitude with me. It was almost hostile. It was angry, almost from upper level staff. I just wasn't cooperating the way they wanted me to.
Right.
So to be really clear, it was written. It was verbal, excuse me. And then after the incident is when I went outside.
The assault incident.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
After the assault, I went outside, the sphere of the office for help. And that's when I sought out that little room that I filled out a form. It was just a form. And then didn't really know what to do after that. I talked to my friend who worked in Kennedy's office. And then she tried to talk to somebody there to see, she wasn't sure what to do either. And again, I was pretty, I told her, but it was it had this, the assault had back then, it was very difficult. It still is difficult for me to discuss openly. And back then it was just, it was really hard. And so I would talk around it. My mom kind of pulled it out of me. I didn't give her a lot of details at first. It took her an hour and she got, I became physically ill for a couple. I don't know. I completely curled up and I called her crying and she was really concerned.
So you called her?
Called her and cried and told her part of it, talked around it. And then she got me to say the words.
So what did you say at first?
first I said there was something happened at work. It was kind of bad. And she said, kind of bad. What does that mean? And she kept like, you know, asking me questions. And then finally I said, well, I had an encounter with Senator Biden, and I don't know what to do. And she said, what do you mean an encounter? What does that mean? And I said, well, she said, and then she got impatient. Tara, just tell me what you're talking about. And anyway, I don't remember how the whole conversation went from there, but I basically then gave her the, you know, the layout. And she was, you know, furious. Like, she wanted to call the police. And then she was like, you know, she was a mom, and she was just like, that's assault. And I was like, no, it's not. I did something. He said he thought, you know, that I liked him. And I was like, I almost like was defending him. It was bizarre.
Right.
Because I was just, I think I was kind of in shock too.
Right.
And I think that I kept thinking if I just, I wanted it to just go away. Mm-hmm. I wanted to just be back to where I was first in that office, and like, you know, nothing ever happened.
Right.
But it wasn't, you know, I wasn't, I was in denial, I guess.
Yeah.
Interesting. So both at the time and then moving forward, you were okay with, and I think it's understandable, but I just want you to explain it to people who may not understand, but it was much easier for you to talk about the harassment than the assault, because you came forward about the harassment, you filed an external report, and not about the assault. And then jumping forward decades, when after Lucy Flores came forward, you shared about the harassment, but not the assault. What's the difference? I just want to make sure that people who don't get it, get it.
It's a very good point. Last April, I saw the way the press was tearing Lucy Flores apart, and a friend of mine had even called me, who went through, who I had told about the assault when it happened. So she was like, kind of like one night when I was like sobbing and like knowing it wasn't just the trauma of what happened because of him. It was because I knew my career was over. Like, that was it. Like, I didn't comply. I insulted him, and he's one of the most powerful people in the world. And at the time, the chairman of the judiciary. Like, I just really felt scared and sad and whatever. So she called me and she said, hey, you know, on the news, they're saying no employees of Biden came forward. And what do you, you know, Charlie, what do you think? And then my daughter knew about it, and my daughter's grown now. She's not, you know, a child. Like, when Obama was elected, you know, and I guess I should share this, and I don't mind sharing it. It's, I'm a lifelong Democrat, and my mom was a Democrat. And I mean, like, it's what I believe in, and I voted for Obama. Biden happened to be on the ticket. There was no way I would come forward then, because my daughter was in junior high, and junior high is junior high. You don't, like, I didn't want to, I didn't even know if people would care. And there was no framework for that anyway.
Right. Me too.
Plus, I really believed in Obama. I just was so happy about him and his platform. He was an activist in Chicago, I'd heard, an organizer in Chicago. And that would, my mom had, you know, that background of being an activist, and I trusted him.
Yeah.
So I thought this will be a great president, and he was. So moving forward to this April, when Lucy Flores was being so torn apart in the press, and like Whoopi Goldberg was making that comment publicly about, someone puts your hand on your shoulder, you just turn around, you tell them take it off. And I was like, oh, that's cringeworthy. Yeah. Like, if you work for them, you don't.
Yeah.
And in a sense, like, she had been supported by him politically. So it's like he was endorsing her. So,
right.
And she, there was
Lucy
a power.
Flores, yeah.
Yeah. And what I notice is he seems to do this a lot with women with power differentials. So now I'm educated about that. I wasn't when I, and I didn't like that. And so I thought, okay. And so
the insinuation was like, look, if this is a guy who does that so much, why is it not why didn't people who work for him experience that? That's what they were saying, right?
Yeah. And I've had more than one person say, oh, well, do you have more women? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, we don't like all talk in a group. Like, okay, look, no, that, I mean, I don't, that's so absurd. Like, now, I guess, because of the Weinstein case or other cases, they're thinking they're half that we move in throngs. Well, and this is the thing. I want to make this really clear. This has been excruciating for me because I liked Biden. I mean, not in a way, right?
Not romantically.
He was a powerful figure for me. He was, you know, I was his subordinate. I was hoping to have a career in the Senate. I wanted to be a senator. I didn't want to sleep with one. I wanted to be taken seriously. I wanted to have a full career and be mentored. And the people that worked around him were brilliant. Like, there's some really brilliant legislative assistants. So it was a collective thing. It wasn't just him, right?
Right.
Excruciating for me is that, you know, he's not like some horrible monster. He's done really good things. And so as you get older, you realize many things can be true at once. Like, people do cool stuff and then do really yucky stuff.
Right.
I just, it's been excruciating because I don't want to say, it's a hard subject still. Mm. And, you know, there's the Me Too movement. It's still like what happened to me in April when I did come forward. I was just totally decimated online on social media, and my reputation was torn apart. It's a Daily Dot article called "Liberal Conspiracy Calls Accuser Russian Agent," something like that. But
so, who did you go forward to at this point when you saw Lucy Flores being torn apart?
I saw Lucy Flores. Oh well, we have a local paper, and someone was in my writing group, knew about it, and said, "Hey, would you talk to a reporter?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know. Let me think about it." And I said, "Okay, you know, if they call me." And they did, like a week later, they called me. And so I accepted the call. And then, and I even emailed Lucy Flores. I emailed her and said, "Hey, I'm sorry, this happened to me." And I sent her, and she goes, "Really, would you talk to someone?" And she gave me someone in the Washington Post, and then they never really followed up.
And what was it like when you told your story at this point, just the harassment story?
Well, I was going to tell the whole thing. I was going to try. And then, I was going to just tell the whole facts, like the whole thing, the whole history with Biden. But the way I was being questioned, it made me so uncomfortable that I didn't trust it. And no offense to the reporters out there. It's just, maybe that's something that could be learned, how to talk to somebody, because I just really got shut down. And the narrative really wanted to be that it wasn't like a sexual thing.
Right.
Like, don't say it's sexual. Like, don't say it's for. And so I was like, okay, I guess I can't really say the whole story, mm-hmm. the whole history. I can't tell it. It was hard. But then I was afraid to. And then, rightly so. Because just the portion that came out, oh my goodness.
Yeah, you got attacked on that.
Yeah, I mean, just the portion that came out was like, they literally the paper hadn't even had the article yet. It was just on the AP wire. I hadn't even seen the article yet, and I was already getting smeared online, so I didn't even know where it was. I assume the AP wire, I don't know. It made me very angry. So I went through that, and then I was kind of relieved that, you know, had I come out with the whole thing, I don't even know, because I received death threats. I received like calls in the middle of the night. There was a thread about me called Alexandra Traitor Reed. And
oh my God.
And then I was trying to do freelance work, and it's a hard thing to when people Google your name, like they would find all kinds of weird things said about me. So as soon as you Google my name. So, and then the whole Biden thing, and people that are very for Biden, it's just so political and so loud right now that, yeah, it was, and we're kind of in a culture of gladiators, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yeah. I think that people maybe don't get that there's a big difference between like a physical violation and like having someone put their hand inside you and being asked to serve drinks or being looked up and down or, you know, running his hand through your hair. Not that any of those things are good things, but there is a big difference.
It was like almost like creating, the more the boundary was crossed, the more that was there. But I think he was looking for me to be a willing participant, right, as well. And I think he was used to that happening, maybe. And I just wasn't. And I think pushing back on being objectified. Plus, I had a boyfriend. I went out with boys my own age in their 20s. I didn't go out with older married men. Not that he was trying to go out with me. There was no conversations about this. So I don't want to misrepresent it.
I'm just saying that people, I think, still be like, well, why don't you tell the whole thing when you did? But it's once much more of a violation.
I can tell you that I still have nightmares sometimes, even now, like years later. When you suffer something like that, it's like, I mean, when you look at it clinically, it seems like, well, it's a terrible thing, but why not, you know, just get over it, like whatever. But the whole thing was, I never got any justice. I never would. I lost my career. I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't choose that situation. I didn't want him to look at me in an objectifying way. By doing that, he minimized me. He minimized my worth at the workplace. He minimized me as a woman, and I thought he was a champion of women. So it was for me, not just the violation, but the violation of my principles, of like my belief system.
Right.
I believed in him.
Yeah.
And he was my boss. Like, he had power over me. So to say no was such a hard thing. And I knew I insulted him, and I didn't want him to be insulted, but it was so awkward. If I had known how the atmosphere was, if somebody had tipped me off and no one did, I would have never applied. I would have gone to a different office. I would have worked for one of the other congressmen or senators or congresswomen,
right?
Like Maxine Waters, who was in California at the time. Because, you know, I came from Panetta's office, so I was used to a very professional office, and there was none of that nonsense there. Like, there was not that. There was not a atmosphere. I found out later that there was kind of a known vibe there. Like, he was known to like women in a certain way.
Biden was.
Yeah. Biden. Not Panetta, yeah.
And so then, okay, so what happens to make you tell the full story now?
I think my daughter's grown.
Right.
She's grown now. And so back last April, when I told that portion and then got such backlash, I didn't feel comfortable telling the whole thing. And then I thought, well, okay, it's just, I'll help people in other ways. Like, I'll help victims of sexual assault. Like, I mean, I'll just help in other ways. And that's what I've done before, instead of, you know, trying to.
Was it that you felt guilty not coming forward? Or was it that, well, this is the justice I'll get, which is by helping others?
I think kind of both. It's not like I felt guilty. I felt, when it happened at the time, I don't want to be confusing. When it happened at the time, I really internalized it and felt like it was my fault.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I really felt like I wanted. Right.
But this is a different guilt that I was asking about, which is like I have not spoken out about this person guilt.
Right. I wasn't brave enough. I just couldn't do it. Yeah. I felt more, not so much guilty as disappointed in myself that I just had the guts to say the words, but it's almost like I would try to say the words and I couldn't get there. I don't know how to really describe it, except it was deeply personal, and it makes you very vulnerable. And I still, you know, I'm sharing the facts, but like, there's little things that are, you know, I keep to myself because it's no one's business. It's not going to be like, you know, a police investigation. I'm never going to sue, whatever, you know, it's past the statute of limitations. Mm. I'm doing this for the next generation. I'm doing this for my daughter, because the generation that we're in, that I'm in, you're younger than me. We need to stop this. We need to stop thinking that because someone's powerful, we can't speak out and we can't be safe in our workspace. You know, we need that place, that framework, to be able to speak out. And that's why I feel so adamant about it, because I thought he was going to drop out and he didn't. And the idea, can you imagine, for me to see the person who did that, and then not only did that, but he never apologized. He never acknowledged it. He never said, I'm sorry. And even like, okay, like, even if he's in denial about what he did, right? And doesn't remember it or doesn't want to, whatever it is. The sexual harassment was witnessed by so many people. It was like a thing. Like, why wouldn't his campaign have called me and said, we're sorry? And they're supposed to be championing women's rights. Why wouldn't they reach out to me? Why wasn't there some healing or conciliatory action? And there never was then in 92, 93. And there isn't now.
Mm.
Yeah, it's ugly. It's
And you went, so then you came, you went forward. You came forward to whom, to, it's January, right? Now we're January 2020.
Correct.
And yes. When, I mean, at this point was Biden wasn't even doing that well. So.
No, he wasn't, but I really wanted to address what he did. And I figured I actually did contact, I contacted Time's Up. Which is an organization for women that helps them get resources if you apply for legal resources and to help you. I got a hold of Time's Up. They were very, they took my case. And after they took my case, they contacted lawyers to see if there was conflicts. Some replied. And then when they heard about the full thing, the full account, they were worried about it. But one of them was going to take it, but then two of his partners in another state were working in the Virginia Biden campaign. Mm. He said, okay, if Biden's probably going to drop out after Virginia, I can represent you then.
Wow.
Well, then he never did because of Biden didn't drop out.
Right.
And then Time's Up got a hold of me and said that their lawyers told them their 501c3 would be at risk. Because it's a presidential campaign and it's too political and Biden was the candidate.
Hmm.
And so they said, we can help you, like, but not with resources. So in other words, I needed a lawyer that would be for free, that would just volunteer their services. They couldn't give me their platform. They couldn't do anything as long as Biden was a candidate.
So they were just trying to help you find a lawyer whom you'd have to pay?
Yeah, and I didn't have the resources to do that. So,
okay.
You know, they stayed in touch and said they, you know, I pushed back a little and said, I can't help who the person is that did this. Where do I go? And, you know, they felt bad. I could tell. And so I don't know if their organization was pressured by the people that fund it or sit on the board or they said it was their attorneys who said their 501c3 would be at risk. And I don't know why that would happen.
Yeah.
But they said it's too political. But I let it go because I'm not trying to trash Time's Up. They're a good organization doing great work. And they even said they believed the veracity of my story. They want to help me. And they were trying to quietly, but they just couldn't. So, yeah. So it's been, I've been standing alone pretty much. And of course, one of the questions that was asked me was, well, are there more women? And I'm like, how would I know this? Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's possible there would be, and that you would know them, but the implication is that, like, if you don't, then it's not a real story.
I know. And of course
it's possible that there are other people like you and they precisely didn't. I mean, you only shared it with who? Your mom and your friend, right?
And my brother. Yeah. And my family. Yeah. My immediate family. But yeah, it's not that incident. I never shared. I was horrified. Yeah. I was trying to share it with my supervisor in that way but I couldn't. So yeah. I found my outlet through like the arts or through like horseback riding and stuff like that. And I would just try to be in denial. And like, I just want, and I really kind of am a peace loving person. I just, I'm a vegan hippie kind of person.
Yeah.
I just want everybody to be happy. I want people to be in a better space. I don't want to bring darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of felt too that talking about it was harmful. I'm a very, like, I remember Lucy Flores, one thing that struck me watching her and listening to her, and I felt so bad for her because I related to what she was saying. She said, you know, I'm a Democratic foot soldier. Because they were asking why she didn't come sooner.
Yeah.
But like, what I want to say to people is, why don't we flip the question? It's not about us, what we do, what we wear, what we think, what our politics are, what our dreams are. The question is, why is he doing that?
Yeah.
Why? Well, the question is about the person perpetrating whatever that is. Like, what is the pattern and why are they doing that? Modify the behavior. And I know they're trying to get Biden to modify his behavior over and over. I mean, it's obvious, like he is. I'm hoping by coming forward with this, and I know it's hard to listen to, and it's hard to live in it, right? But my justice now, the only justice I can have, is to be moving freely in the world and to heal and not be silenced. One of the things I talk about being silenced is when people say, oh, why didn't you come forward? Well, I tried. I went to media outlets like this summer and before January, nobody ever returned my call. Not one. I went to Warren. I wrote a letter to her and I was supportive of her becoming president. I would have loved to have seen a woman president. Like I wrote her I alluded to it. I didn't write details, but I wrote what there was something wrong here and like wrote about it. No response except a form letter to contact my local representative. I wrote Kamala Harris. I wrote AOC. Not one person. I wrote celebrities. I wrote Me Too. I wrote Ronan Farrow. I wrote The New Yorker, New York Times, Washington Post. And so I want people to know this. It's not that easy to get your story heard. Not one person answered me. Not one. Elizabeth Warren was the only one, and that was a form letter. And I felt so alone and isolated. And the only thing that would happen is once in a while when I would try to put it out like on Twitter, like saying, hey, this is wrong. I'm being called a Russian agent. This happened. Biden's supporters would just write, would say again, you're a Russian agent. You're a bot. Yeah. And it's being silenced about sexual assault and sexual harassment. It's like a slow death, you know, and I'm not going to let this take me down. I think by shining light on it, some people will say it didn't happen and they don't believe me and I don't care. The people that need to hear it will. And the survivors that are being silenced that are out there will hear it and they'll know, okay, we can do this. You can do this. And so I'm telling you, do this. Shine light on it. The last thing people want when they abuse is to be examined. They don't want that.
Yeah, it's interesting. So yeah, it's like a different level. So there's the silencing of someone, just like your generic run-of-the-mill, sadly, totally predictable silencing of victims, survivors. And then there's this other thing where it's like, now it's a political thing. So you're now not just ignored, but you're like smeared as, and I guess this is what always happens. It's just a question of how people are smeared.
Yeah, almost like McCarthyism or whatever. And that's before a lot of people's time and before both of our times, but people lost their careers. And in fact, I did too. And retaliation is common from abusers.
Right.
But he used his staff, he used his power, he weaponized it. And that's what's really ugly. As far as not only did he weaponize it when I was his employee and they retaliated, that's against the law.
Right.
Besides, put aside everything else. That was against the law, the retaliation and what they did to me. I don't even know where to go from here, except that for my own sanity and peace, it's now for the generation behind me, the other people. I'm going to take the heat. And believe me, no one on the right likes me. You know, I kind of expected trolls or whatever. That's not that hurt. And then it got a little scary, right? Like I got scared. They call it, I found out because I didn't know this, but it's called doxing.
Doxing, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they found out where I lived.
How? And what did they do?
Because someone had said they were coming to my house and you were threatening me on the phone.
Did they mention where you live? Were they right?
Yeah. He said, I know you live in, we're coming. You're a traitor. Traitor. You better get Putin to protect you. Something like that. Then they said crude stuff to me. I can't remember some of it. And then I saved one email that was a threat. Now at first I was just whatever. I just wanted it away from me. Now I'll document it better. But I just I have a law degree, but I don't practice law and I help nonprofits. That's what I do. And I'm an expert witness for Monterey County for domestic violence cases. And so I do that for a stipend, it's almost like a volunteer thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how I channel this rage or energy is I help other people.
Yeah.
It's just, and I think that's healthy. I think we all need to hear that right now. Cause we're all kind of feeling upset about what's happening as we really should. It's a very hard time. I know for a lot of people. So what I would say is just
you know, sometimes just immersing yourself in something different that has nothing to do with your own life, it helps. Right. It's healing.
Yeah, it's true. It's like an antidepressant to help others.
Yeah. And restorative justice is just not always possible. And what I'm hoping is that we can get to a place where sexual harassment and sexual assault is not such a stigma where it's difficult to talk to about, and that there can be restorative justice. It doesn't take 90 women in 40 years to get someone. Yeah, right. That or that, like, if you're in a workplace where it's happening, you can speak up and you're not going to lose your whole career. A powerful man doesn't have the power to do that, or a woman. You know, there are male victims too. Yeah. So.
And women victims of women too. Okay. And anything else that you want to make sure you say? I mean, do you want to share that thing that you said you don't, like, you said, like, I don't want to say what he said, that thing he said to you?
Yeah, I guess I could.
I mean, you don't have to.
It's okay. It's just, it's almost like giving a weapon to them.
How so?
Well, it's like, I don't want them to know how much it hurt. I don't, you know, I mean, I don't want him to know when they, I don't know. But
that,
yeah,
like that you remembered it?
Yeah, just the, I don't know. But yeah, I can say it. So do you want me to go back and how do you want me to?
Well, yeah, you just mentioned that there was something he said to you that you didn't want to say.
Yeah, there was something he said that I didn't want to say, and I didn't want to say it because it's the thing that stays in my head over and over, like, and it's a thing that kind of stayed with me over the years. But he said, when he had me against the wall after he had done, after I pulled away, and he had said, "Hey, you know, come on, I heard you liked me," and I knew he was angry right after he took his finger. He just, like, pointed at me and he said, "You're nothing to me." And then he just looked at me and he goes, "You're nothing, nothing." And then I must have reacted. And I think he only said it twice. I said, but I just heard the word nothing. And I must have reacted because that's when he took me by the shoulders and he said, "You know, you're okay. You're fine. You're okay." But then afterwards, like, it kept replaying in my head. And like last April, when all that stuff came out, I got really, really sad about it. And the thing that I remember most, almost more than the assault itself, was just being told I was nothing. And he was right. That's how people treated me. That's how office treated me. And I have no platform. I am no one. And to him, I'm nothing. So, yeah. So if people want to know why women don't come forward, that's a good example of why. And I've been trying to get past it, trying to feel like I have spent most of my life hiding from powerful men, be it my abusive ex-husband later or Joe Biden. And I am now at the point where I'm done. Like, this, I don't want this to be someone else's life. I don't want my life to be someone else's life. And that's a really hard thing to say. But I don't want someone to live what I went through, because it was hard and it was empty, with no justice. And I don't want that to be repeated. I want, for me, restorative justice would be for someone to be able to come forward and have healing. And I know there's a lot of pain around sexual assault. It's confusing, but my mom really was a wonderful person, and that she helped me through a lot about explaining about it not being related to sex as much as power. And, you know, that was really important, because I was able to not internalize that part of it later as I matured. And that's important for people to hear, you know, that are going through this or have gone through this. And the other part, the self-esteem part, that's just, you know, you have to rebuild that, right?
and it takes time. And sometimes it's not a linear process. It's, you feel great and then you don't, you feel great, you don't. But you can't, other people's vision of you can't be internalized like that. So I learned a lot about non-internalizing other people's stuff. And it seems like people like Biden, powerful people like that, or just people that engage in that behavior, seem very good at deflecting and not internalizing anything. And if you're kind of the opposite, where you're empathic and you're like wanting to help people, if you're an empathetic person, it has a deep effect. Like what people say, it can really impact you. You know, words are like arrows. They find their mark. And, you know, in my case, the words he said to me found their mark. He made me feel like it was my fault. He made me feel like I was insignificant and that I had no power. And I look back at that and I see him talking about running on a platform of character. And I just want to scream. Like, I want to scream, how dare you? How dare you talk about all the things you've done for women when I know who you are? I see you. I experienced you. And that's not who you are. And it is just time for all of this to stop. So, you know, people, I'm not trying to say all this and people are going to say, well, what, come out now? Well, I've been trying and no one's been giving me a platform. So thank you for allowing me to speak on your show. And I appreciate that because I have tried. Mm. So if people are saying that, don't, I've been trying for a while.
Well, thank you so much, Tara.
Thank you.
Thanks again so much for listening to The Katie Halper Show. You can find Ryan's piece at The Intercept. The Katie Halper Show is produced by Josh Bregman, edited by Ted Reedy, and our theme song is by the band Cordova.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.